Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today, I'm speaking with Robert Scott, the president of the Fresno Cactus and Succulent Society, who's also an environmental specialist with Caltrans. We talk about the surprising world of succulents and cacti, how they thrive in dry climates, what makes them so fascinating to grow, and why they've become such a fixture in California gardens. Robert shares practical tips on watering and propagation, insights from his environmental work across the Central Valley, and thoughts on the ethics of collecting plants and the rise of hybrids. We also discuss how drought-tolerant landscaping can help Fresno adapt to a changing climate, and how local plant societies like his build community through a shared love of the natural world. I really enjoyed talking with Robert, and I know you will as well. So let's go meet Robert and hear more about the world of succulents. Waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best! Robert, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
I really had to think about this one, but we actually really enjoy different foods from different cultures. So especially like Asian cuisine. So Four Seasons out in Clovis for a Chinese restaurant is one of our favorites.
Someone just told me they went to a birthday party there and they were so surprised when I've never been. Tell me about Four Seasons. What am I missing?
So not having been to China, it seems very authentic.
Okay.
But I think good atmosphere. It's always busy, but the food is superb. It has great flavor. You can customize it too. I've gone with people before that don't want onions or something. And it customizes very well, but they have a huge menu. So there's a lot of things to try, and they have the dim sum too. But they just have really good flavor there. And just kind of have to make sure that there's tables. You may have to wait a little bit because it is popular, but it's a great Chinese place in town.
Okay. I need to go. If you were to go there tonight, what would be your order, do you think?
So it's always probably not Chinese, but the pad thai noodles. Have to have the thicker noodles. Always the sweet and sour pork. Probably either orange chicken or cashew chicken. And then love the walnut shrimp. So they have a few things that are really good.
That sounds incredible. So we're going to jump into succulents. And is it cactuses or cacti? Just clarify this for us at the start.
It can actually be either. So it's one of those words, like if you're saying cactus and succulents or cacti, it's whatever you prefer.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So you're the president of the Fresno Cactus and Succulent Society, but I wanted to start by asking you about your day job, which is working on environmental issues with Caltrans. And just a kind of a general question to start, how do you think that work has changed your view of the natural world?
I come from a plant and science background, biology based as well. So I knew that aspect of the kind of natural world, but being a part of this team with Caltrans, I work with people that are hazardous waste specialists, air, water, noise, even cultural with our cultural resources and working with the Native American tribes that are around us. So it's really broadened my view of the natural world around, and especially what happens here in the Valley. With my district in Caltrans, we're just the major Valley counties around here. So Madera, Fresno, Kern, Kings, and Tulare. But there's a lot to it. Just the Central Valley in itself, we have every biome that you can think of, except for coastal, of course. But it's fun to work in all sorts of things and get to hear all the different, pretty much issues that kind of come up and how we would mitigate for them or how we would work around them so that we don't impact the environment. Or if unfortunately, if we do, then we mitigate for it so that we save pieces someplace else or plant extra trees or something that offsets what our construction is going to do. So it's actually opened me up to just being more aware of what's around us, how different things impact the environment, and especially even how they impact even the human lives. Sometimes we deal with stuff basis like even hazardous waste. You think of things that happened 60, 70 years ago, but we're still dealing with them now. So it definitely some issues that have affected the environment, and it's fun to see those and how we've worked around them and how we've made things better. We have worked to clean up the environment as we go as well.
So it sounds like it's expanded your scope, but also your depth as you look at the world around you, and you can see things through history and through a lens of culture, which I think not a lot of people think about in terms of the natural world, seeing it through culture, but science is really, it comes from a culture. Do you understand it that way?
Yeah, I do. And that's definitely just like what you said, depth and scope. You really just open your eyes that it's not just you and your small little community. It extends to everything you do, everything that happens, in this case, on the roadways, building new things, and how things can just last for generations or forever. So it's definitely broadened and deepened my appreciation and just outlook on everything.
Fantastic. Let's go ahead and jump into succulents. I want to start by defining some terms.
Okay.
So my understanding is succulents are a broad category, and then cacti or cactuses are within a subdomain of that larger domain. Can you unpack for us the kind of broad taxonomy or overview of what succulents are within the natural world?
And I will try. So let's dive into this. So succulents are the broad term. We think of them as all of, I want to say, like the essentially like the cactus or succulents that we see like in the store. But succulents are defined for anything, any plant that has succulent tissue within their organs. Succulents can be bulbs because they store water and nutrients within a stem, a modified stem, like a bulb. Or you don't have things like trees or other plants that move water continuously. It's mostly for a drought-tolerant tissue that holds the water for long-term use. There can be lots of things. There's a lot of plants that we call succulents that look like green bushes, but when you start to feel their leaves or look at their stems under microscopes, they have that succulent tissue. So their cells and their tissues are made to hold onto the water, not immediately use it, so that they can survive through periods of drought.
Yeah, and
But,
it's counterintuitive for me sometimes. I wasn't really familiar with succulents until I met my partner, and she was really into them for a lot of the 2010s.
Oh, yeah.
And when she'd show me a succulent, describe them as drought tolerant, and I would feel the soft flesh of the skin, it just was counterintuitive. So succulents evolved for drier environments and retain water as a way to survive. Is that an accurate way to describe it?
Absolutely. And the thing about too is that most of the major succulents come from Africa, specifically like Southern Africa and Namibia. They've all evolved to have those periods of no rain or drought. So you, when you go to the store, you see a succulent in perfect health. So it's got nice thick leaves. It looks like it's full of water, but those leaves are made to shrivel up, but still keep the plant alive using its water over long periods of time. So we always see them nice and healthy, but it's those tissues that are able to hold on to it, and that's where they get their drought stuff, their drought ability. And it's interesting because succulents occur around the world. But cactus are actually only in the New World, North and South America. And cactus are mainly defined as still having succulent bodies. They have the tissues to do that. But most of them do have a thorn base, but they are only from the New World.
I've gotten a lot of different advice about how to water and care for my succulents. Does it really depend on the species, how much water they need? Obviously, at the maybe marginal level, that's true, but generally, you're supposed to water succulents less, correct?
Correct. So generally, cactus and succulents can take less water. So you don't want to overwater them because that's when we try to care for them too much or love them too much or put them on a watering schedule that's every 3 days, or excuse me, 3 times a week. It's just too much for them. But that having been said, is that they are all made to take in that water when it's those rainy seasons. They can take water every couple of days when it's warm out, but they have to have that really good drainage so that they don't keep their roots wet between the waterings.
What
But it's
happens if
interesting.
you overwater them?
So overwatering is interesting because overwatering means that there's less oxygen in the soil. The soil is now wet. All the root hairs where they take up all their nutrients start dying off. Then that leaves openings for fungi and bacteria to enter, and then you get root rot. So those
Nice.
roots just turn into mush. The plant's no longer taking up water. And they just, the spores continue up the plant and it just turns the plant into a brown mush.
I had this ongoing ethical debate with my partner. When we lived in Pasadena, we would take walks and we'd see these beautiful kind of planters and flower beds with succulents. And she would always snip off a little bit, like a little trimming that she would then propagate at home. And I always thought that was stealing, but she said, no, it's like gleaning. Where do you line up in that debate?
It's one of those, I have to think about it in my terms. Like if I had a garden and plenty of succulents, like it could use a trim, but it's always appreciated if someone asks first. When you talk to most people that are into this hobby, they'll gladly give cuttings. We know how fast they grow or how big they get that cuttings go. So it's always best to ask for permission. That's how it works. If something's already broken off and maybe in the curb, that's up to you. But it's definitely one of those things like at a store, at a nursery that has cactus and succulents, you definitely don't want to be doing it there. That's their product. On the floor, it's hard to, is it free range? I think everyone has their own definition of what they want to do. But if it's in a yard, it's one of those things that maybe best to go up and just ring the doorbell once, see if someone's there. And, hey, I saw this really pretty succulent in your yard and it's big. I like to grow a piece. May I have a piece of it? It's just one of those things.
Yeah. I'm glad you took my side in that debate.
Very good.
So, what do we need to know in terms of propagating? I've had successful attempts of propagating succulents from clippings and other times where it just hasn't worked. Are there a few pointers that you could suggest in terms of how to do it, what to look for if it's taken root, if you will, like indicators that it is propagating successfully?
So for any of them, there's actually many different methods of propagation. So we have the stem cuttings. That's just like taking a cutting off of something. You let it callus over. We have to make sure that cut or that break calluses over for a few days so that when you put it in the soil, if there's any fungal spores or bacteria, it doesn't go right into that cut and then cause rot itself. So whenever you want to take a cutting, you want to make sure that you leave it out to dry for a couple of days, just so that callus forms. But you can get into seed production, you can get into leaf cuttings depending on the species. So there's a lot of different ways. But yeah, definitely when you just take a piece of a plant, the main thing for that is take a piece, do a clean cut or break it off, remove some leaves from the bottom if it's a leafy succulent so that stem can go back into the ground. Let it harden off or callus over for a few days. And it depends on temperature. If it's during the winter time, you may need to wait a full week. If it's during the summer, a day or two is fine. But then actually put it directly into the soil. At that point, you can water a little bit. And just having that stem below the soil surface is going to trigger root production because it's dark. So the plant's realizing that it's someplace that roots can grow. It'll start sending out roots. You may get the cutting to shrivel a little bit because it's not taking up water currently, but within a couple of weeks, you should get roots and you will be good to go. But stem cuttings are very easy.
I've read in many places that California is the global center for succulent propagation, succulent innovation. But many succulents that grow here are obviously not native. As you mentioned, a lot of them come from Africa. How do you think about discussions that are focused on increasing our native plant life and landscaping?
Yeah, you're right. Most of the succulents are not native here. We only have one family of succulents that is actually native to California called Dudleas. But for one of those, I think it's always best to actually propagate our native plants. All of them are underneath stress due to habitat loss for homes and agriculture. So it's a great idea to definitely propagate and promote natural or the native plants here in California. Unfortunately, because of California and its diverse biomes, plants are only native to certain areas. So it's hard just to start propagating something and thinking you can plant it anywhere. Those plants have evolved for millions of years to live specifically at those sites. And speaking of the Dudleas are mostly all coastal or cooler weather. We have one species that lives up here in the Sierra Nevadas, but most of them are on the coastal range. It's harder there because of with habitat loss on the beaches and people building homes, but it's definitely a great idea if we can save some of those habitats so these plants and of course the animals that live with them have a spot to continue to live and do their thing. They were here first, so it's good if we can keep some areas wild, but definitely having that propagation or having people do that extra propagation to promote more plants in their areas is definitely a win-win.
Okay, related to that question, but on a different vein, is genetic hybrids. I know that they're common and are increasing as more people try to develop new plants that are either adapted to the environment or grow to a certain size that people desire. I've also read that experts are concerned with the proliferation of genetic hybrids within the succulent world might make it hard to identify what species it is. Do you view this as a concern, or is this just something that we do as humans? We take something, we breed, we develop.
We've been doing that for a very long time, and that's how we've gotten crops and everything else. And for some reason, the native ones, or the pure species, if you want to call it, or the native species that we can find. They're never as pretty as the humans want. We take them and we breed them for more spines or the red color, like in succulents. For in the case like this, it's one of those things that the hybrids for cactus and succulents, they're not getting out there into the wild. It's very hard for them to propagate themselves. So they're not spreading and taking over our native areas. That's specifically more for the succulents. Let's say I'm into aloes and there's a bunch of aloe hybrids that people have made and I make them myself. And it just to get them different sizes, more color, more teeth. Those aren't native here. We have the environment for them to grow, but they're not going to produce seed and go crazy. But things like cactus, there's one of the, just the Opuntias, the prickly pear cactus that we've had here. It's been introduced across the world where it has taken over vast areas of Africa because there's nothing that eats it and it seeds readily. So that's always a possibility. Usually those are actually just pure species that are inhabiting a new area and they take off. But for the hybridizing of succulents themselves, it's not really an issue. And I actually see a lot of sterilizing in the hybrids that they're not going to produce themselves. But yeah, it's an interesting topic. If keeping it pure species or doing the hybrids, one aspect that we've seen too is, and kind of like I brought up, these hybrids look better. They sometimes grow better or easier for people to grow. So that may actually help the industry so that there's not a need or a desire for the native plants. So people aren't going out and destroying whole habitats just to collect the native plants or the pure species. So it could actually reduce the need for that, that people only want the colorful hybrids. So it keeps the native populations untouched. So that's a possibility too. It's kind of hard to say. We're in the very beginnings of a lot of the hybrids for succulents. So we'll have to see where it goes.
Some people might argue that succulents had their moments in the 2010s when they were common home design additions, but perhaps their cultural significance has dipped a little bit. Are you seeing this online and at your events? Are you seeing a change in pace in the terms of interest levels, or is that interest been static and it's just not highlighted as much?
No, actually, we have seen a little bit of a decline probably in the last year or so, maybe 2 years. We have our big sales that we put on for society where we have hundreds of people come to purchase plants and to see show plants. But it seems like either everyone by now is already has the common plants that are growing and maybe getting into some specialty ones or some more rare stuff. But it's that drive of everything common or everyone wanting everything has seemed to gone down a little bit, but it's still fairly high. I think the main thing is that the market has been flooded. We have a lot of stores now, especially during COVID and before, that started bringing in cactus and succulents, so they're more readily available. And when I go to stores now, used to be you buy something right then and there because it's going to fly off the shelves. And I can see stuff lasting 2, 3 weeks, if not longer. And then unfortunately, not doing the best in a store. So I think that the desire has maybe leveled out, would be a better term instead of dropped too
Dissipated.
much. But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I think it has a little bit.
Okay. We're going to jump into my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to give you a
Okay.
bunch of succulents, topics, places, and you tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why.
We'll see how I go do.
Okay. Me and Ed's Pizza.
Oh, overrated.
Okay. Why?
Cardboard crust. I do not enjoy them. The crust is too thin. It's always burnt. And they do that cornmeal on the back of it. Just not good.
Okay, so the undercarriage is where you have the issues.
Yes,
Got
undercarriage.
it. Got it. Buying plants from Home Depot.
Neutral. Sometimes they have good stuff.
Okay,
But,
how do you
yeah.
judge if you're going to a Home Depot?
I prefer Lowe's over Home Depot. I'll say
Okay.
that right
Okay,
now.
whatever big box
Or,
store,
yeah, it's
yeah.
any big
How
box.
do you judge?
Yeah, there's good ones and bad ones. I have quite a few plants myself, so it's mainly if something is an oddball or rare, that's when I'm like, oh, okay, I'll purchase that or something I don't have. And lately, some of these places have gotten into kind of bigger and harder to find plants just because they've had so many of them and they propagated them like crazy during COVID and now they're coming out. So sometimes you can find good stuff. So I'm neutral on that.
Okay, the next one, snake plants.
Oh, shoot. I'm gonna say overrated.
Because
Just
they are everywhere,
they are
and
everywhere, but
that.
there's some great forms. What we see everywhere is just a common old school snake plant, but the sansevieria come in a lot of cool shapes and colors. So those are great if you can find the hard to find ones, but to me, everyone's a drought tolerant snake plant. No, it's not. It likes its water. If you wait too long between waterings, the roots start to die and you can rot it very quickly, which I've done several times.
Okay. Next one, Evergreen, the nursery located out there in Clovis.
Oh, you're trying to get me canceled.
Yeah, I am. You could just say properly rated, I guess, to sidestep the question.
Great nursery. They know what they're talking about. They are great for the area and they always have lots of plants.
Yeah. I guess another way to frame the question would be strengths and weaknesses. They do well in certain areas. What do you wish they had more of?
I wish they had actually more land just so that they would have more items. They do have a plethora. They try to do everything. So they have fruit trees, they have cactus and succulents, they have roses. So I think they're great. I wish they just had more. But yeah, great workers out there. I know several of them. Several of them are in the Cactus Club themselves. So great people working out there. That's
Fantastic.
it.
Fantastic. Next one, sand dollar cactus.
Sand dollar cactus. I believe you're talking about Astrophytums.
Yeah, sorry. I just couldn't say
No, you're good. You're good.
it.
But as we get into plants, the common names, there's common names for everything. Some of the common names I know. The Astrophytums are great. They are underrated. I think more people need to grow them. They are just a little finicky. They
I think I've
certain
killed one
ones.
before, so what would you recommend to have a thriving Astrophytum?
They're big on rot. So the main thing with them is really good draining soil, water at most once a week during the summertime, less during the winter, maybe even once a month during the winter, but making sure that you have that draining soil. If you don't, it's going to harbor pathogens and just keep the water around the roots, and they do not like that.
Okay. Next one, having a greenhouse in the Central Valley.
Oh, underrated. Everyone needs one.
Okay, so this is counterintuitive. So explain this, because my understanding was greenhouses, obviously, I have some understanding they increase humidity, but my understanding was they were much more for colder climates where you'd have cold winters and didn't want to lose your plant life. But we have moderate or temperate winters, so why do we need a greenhouse?
So this dives into a lot of like where cactus and succulents come from as well and what they need to survive. So it's interesting. We think of cactus and succulents as deserts. They are dry during the winter, maybe some water every now and then. But cactus and succulents, let me take that back. Succulents are divided up into winter growers and summer growers. So, like in my greenhouse, I have a greenhouse where I put some succulents in that cannot get water during the wintertime. And we're in a Mediterranean environment. So, we get our water when it's cold out. Most of the places in the world don't have that. So my succulents are under cover in a greenhouse so they don't get any rain and I can control their watering during the wintertime. There's also succulents that are, or cactus even, that are from the tropics that can't get below 50 degrees. So they're also in the greenhouse so they stay warmer. So we have a, it depends on where they're coming from the world. There's a bunch of stuff that can live out here year round, take as much water anytime throughout the year, but there's a lot of stuff that has evolved for millions of years that you cannot change their watering. And people try. And then they kill their plant. But we just have summer growers that get water when it's warm, and we can water them with our hoses during the summertime, but they can't get any water when it's cold outside our wintertime, so they have to be undercover. So that's our main thing for greenhouses.
Got it. Next one, plant identification apps. I downloaded one recently and I thought it had identified something correctly, but then I did some Googling and realized that it had misidentified. Do you think these apps are over or underrated?
Oh, overrated and dumb.
Okay. So you've ha haven't had a lot of success using them?
No, I don't have a lot of success using them. I mainly have people that come up to me with the app, coworkers, friends, and say, I did, but I put on the app and it said it was this. Is this right? I go, no, it's not. So I will never download the app. I know the plants and I'm here to help anybody that needs help, but the apps are just too generalized and they don't work probably 90% of the time.
Okay, gotcha. Is there one that's better than another, or you just recommend not using any of them?
Not really using any of it, but now, and I take that back. So if they may get you on the right track, let's
Okay.
put it that way. So if you're using an app or even like Google Image, put it in there, see what it says, see what comes up first, and then I would Google it yourself and see if it looks the same. It's just, I kind of remind people that not all plants look the same of what they are, the name type. But, and then of course, when you Google, maybe the first one or two are correct, but Google's also whoever puts their image in and could call it wrong itself. So definitely look for different sources. Look for good websites that maybe are garden-based. Don't put it on Facebook in your garden groups because someone will say its name and they don't even know what they're talking about.
Got
But
it. Got it.
yeah, it's
So,
hard.
yeah. All right. I'm going to do a couple either ors. I'm just going to give you a type of succulent, two types of succulents. You tell me which one you prefer.
Okay.
Okay. String of pearls or Burroughs tail?
Burroughs tail.
Okay. Why?
It's an impressive looking plant. When you get a hanging pot and it just fills it up and it grows 3 feet long and it's just this massive kind of mane of a succulent, it's just a really cool plant. But I do love the string of pearls, but a lot of people have a problem growing them. So.
Okay, two types of cactus, a blue candle or a peanut?
Oh. Probably a peanut. It's just a little easier. It fills up the pot. They bloom. The entire plant could look like it's on fire, which is how many blooms it has. The blue candle needs a little more protection during the wintertime and has little white flowers every now and then, but the peanut cactus is easy and it puts on a really good display.
Okay, two more, aloe or agave?
Absolutely, aloe.
Okay.
Aloes
Okay,
are my
explain that.
favorite.
These are really common, so I'd love to hear you explain.
Oh, so aloes are amazing. So, first of all, they come in every shape and size that you can think of. We have miniatures to tree aloes. And tree aloes, 40 feet tall, 40 feet wide. So it's amazing that everything that they come in. They can bloom multiple times a year. They don't die after flowering. Flowers can range from anywhere. There's white aloes, yellows, reds, pinks. And then they put on really good displays. There's over 300 pure species of aloe, I believe. Maybe even 600. I'm trying to recall right off the top of my head. But like one of my favorites is called Aloe marlothii. It's from South Africa. It's a tree aloe. It just forms one stem with this great big head on top. The leaves are all bumpy, covered in spines. But when it blooms in the springtime and it produces this inflorescence, this flower structure that could have 40 spikes on it, and it blooms for over a month. In a pure color, most of them are yellow, sometimes orange, red every now and then. But the hummingbirds love it. It's just this grand display. And you get that with aloes come in every shape and size. And I grow pretty much, oh, I grow over 75 species myself. And they're
Wow.
just one of my favorites.
And is the care for that, for those different species, fairly uniform?
It is. I would say out of all of them, 80% are summer growers that can be put outside in the yard year round. They'll take water whenever. They'll grow up. Most of them can take frost. They bloom different times throughout the year. So you could, if you have enough aloes of different types, you can have aloes blooming year round. And then the other 20%, which are winter growers, is what we call them, which are perfect for a Mediterranean climate. I have a section in my yard that's just winter growers, so the sprinklers are cut off from them during the summertime, but they're starting to wake up because we're getting the cooler weather, and they only want rainwater. We supplement it if we don't get enough rain, but they only want water during the wintertime. So there's a bunch of different shapes with them, like the fan aloe. It turns into this big bushy aloe with some smaller red flowers, but the structure itself is gorgeous. There's everything you want in a succulent, the aloes have.
Got it. Okay, last one. Saguaros or barrel cactus?
Oh, you got to go with the saguaros. They're like the big king daddy of cactus out there. They're only in certain ranges here in the U.S. They're only in the U.S. Oh, and I take the bag. Northern Mexico too. But it's something that the rest of the world doesn't have. And they grow so big, they live essentially 250 years. They're huge habitats for creatures in the desert and provide a lot of resources for them. But they're just stunning. If you have something that our life, every life is finite. We have something that can live 250 years that's going to outlive a human and provide and grow and have this kind of iconic look. It's a great plant.
And I haven't been to Tucson to see the park. I don't know. Is it a state park or a national park, Saguaro? Is it
I think
Saguaro
it's a
National?
national.
It's a
I think it's
national
federal,
park?
yeah.
Okay. Where's your favorite place to go see succulents? I'll say for me, this is not like a national park or anything, but the Huntington Library has an amazing succulent section to their
Yes.
gardens there. I could get lost in there for days. It's incredible. Do you have a favorite place you go to look at succulents?
They're not just around anywhere. So, yeah, my number one is definitely the Huntington. They have probably the best garden. Probably outside of places like Africa and other places that grow these cactus naturally, but they have everything there. They have the giant dragon trees from Socotra. They have everything. And they've done their garden so well that it's split up into different areas of their cactus bin, of their cactus area. And they just have specimens that have been there since the start of the Huntington itself. So you have these massive specimens that you don't see anywhere else. Like they have a Dioscorea, which is 4 or 5 feet wide minimum. And it's the plant that's been there probably since it opened. And you're never going to see anything that big in the US, maybe even in the wild, because most things munch on stuff or don't live as long in the wild. So the Huntington's definitely up there. The LA Arboretum has a great display too. They're bigger. They mostly focus on a lot of different trees and different herbaceous areas, but they do have a great cactus and succulent area. Harder to get into, I believe, but like Lotus Land in Santa Barbara is a great one. Another individual that does tours in his home, I believe it's Aloes in Wonderland. He's in Santa Barbara as well. His name is Jeff, but he has acres and he has tons of aloes and different succulents, mostly succulents, and different hybrids that he's made. But essentially, years ago, there used to be a fire. There was a fire in Santa Barbara and it wiped out himself and all of his neighbors. And then he rebuilt and did his entire landscape in succulents. Years later, another fire, all of his neighbors burned down again. His house and land was spared. So it definitely shows that they don't burn or don't burn as well, and it saved his house. But he's got a great garden itself. He's private, but he offers tours. There's just not, I'm trying to think of some other garden places
Those are some
local.
great recommendations to
Okay.
start. I've wanted to go to Lotus Land. Is it just hard to get tickets or what? Or how does that work exactly?
Yeah, I think it's hard to get tickets. They only offer tours every now and then, so you kind of have to be on a wait list. And then, not for sure, but I believe, yeah, you have to purchase a ticket, and it just depends on when they have time.
Okay, I see. All right, let's jump into some questions now where more leans into your role as the president of the Succulent Society, which is just about organizing local events. Do you feel that steady social media activity actually brings returns to your organization? Or do you think it's become one of those like perfunctory activities that doesn't yield a lot, but you feel like you need to do it because it's what everyone else does?
No, we have seen a huge increase in just the last couple of years by getting more into social media. I think social media has changed from pretty much the only one being Facebook, but now we have TikTok, Instagram that are seeing bigger crowds and more of a following and interaction with those members on there instead of Facebook. But Facebook's still a great opportunity that we do. But we do Facebook and Instagram for our society. And we've actually seen a big boost. Now, we don't have a lot of data to see if those interactions online are turning into actual in-person interactions at our events. We have a lot of hits and likes on our Instagram, but it's hard to say if they're coming to it. But yeah, we believe that it's definitely brought in more people. So yeah, we're definitely into it as part of the society. It's a lot of work. Luckily, we have one of our club members named German now that's helping us a lot on social media, so that's been a blessing too.
Okay. A lot of like local philanthropic, civic, or even hobbyist organizations, like I would categorize the Succulent Society, they tend to skew older in age. And that's natural as retirees have a lot more time to dedicate to activities like this. How do you ensure that you continue to innovate if your group does skew a bit older in terms of the age range?
Yeah, our society is not just like that. We are skewing towards an older membership age, and that's just, I think, natural. You get these bouts and people stay forever, and then they, as we all do, we get older. But to really draw in kind of a newer crowd, like we just talked about, social media has been great. A lot of our newer members or on the younger side all have accounts for the different social media, and that's where they engage at. And they like to have that, not that always like an in-person meeting, but just engaging on social media for them is a thing to do. We all go and scroll probably sometimes for too long during the day, but we scroll and like our things, and that's where we get a lot of engagement from them. But what we try to do is, and what I've done too is during events is to ask the younger crowd and see what they want to see from it. Not excluding anybody of certain ages. We make sure that they're always welcome and they have everything they need during an event. But I like to try to incorporate something at least something new every year to try to bring in that younger crowd or at least make them more comfortable when they're there. So in that middle age range, I can see the younger crowd where maybe they want music during an event. Maybe they don't want it loud, though. Same with the older crowd. So you just play that role of what they want to see on both age groups, but we're definitely trying our best to get in a younger crowd and hopefully increase the length that the club is around longer.
Okay. What for you is the ideal size of the Fresno Succulent Society? Sometimes organizations just chase growth and they grow at exponential rates. And then what happens is people feel like they don't have influence. It's hard to participate because it's a bigger group. So for you, like, what do you imagine is the ideal size you'd like to see the Succulent Society become?
We average about 150 members a year. We're actually pretty large for a Cactus and Succulent Society compared to other ones around the state. And we get anywhere from 40 to 60 people in an in-person meeting. And we also offer still hybrid meetings on Zoom for anybody that can't make it in person. But we're probably at that point that it's hard to say with that. We could always have more members because we know some members just don't come. They're not active. They just want a newsletter. They just want the information or to get announcements when we have our plant sales. So more members, I definitely think is not a bad thing. The when it comes to like participation or making sure that some members don't get left behind or stand out, I make it my priority to make sure that everyone's having a good time. No one has any issues in the club when they come in. So if anybody wants to participate or anybody's having an issue or wants to ask questions, or maybe they're shy, I always am there to be their one person on the side that they can come up to and talk, or say, hey, I want to participate. I would like to do this. I would like to see this happen. Or not everyone's comfortable in a crowd. Definitely people come up to me even after the meetings to ask me questions one-on-one to get more of a help, and that they just don't want to ask them in front of people. So it's hard to say. How many are too big? Is it too big or too small? Because I think just people have different levels of comfort.
Okay, I think that's a great way of putting it. Your organization has held a lot of events in Fresno. What do you think separates the successful ones from the unsuccessful?
With Fresno, heat is a big one. The weather.
Yes.
It was funny. We had our annual show and sale last June. The weekend before, beautiful. The weekend after, beautiful. Our weekend, hot.
Okay.
And we actually saw a lower attendance, and we believe it was just because that first weekend of the summer, Fresno Central Valley people are like, it's hot, I'm not going out. So the heat can place, the weather itself can play something in that. I mean, we see that too when we do our booth area at the Spring Home and Garden Show. And again, if it's raining that weekend, and somehow it always does the first weekend in March, less attendance. But what we're seeing too is advertising. We have this issue of advertising with the club, and I think all nonprofits do, in that advertising is very expensive, and we're trying to get the word out there with our events, but purchasing big ads is not in our budget. So we just do the free social media, get the word out with our members. Hopefully they repost the social media, they repost the flyers. So we're always looking for ways and for even businesses to help us out if they'll put a flyer up. But advertising is a big thing that have been hit and miss in the past. We know we try something new and it does really well and we keep doing it forever, but it's just that next level. As a club, we can't go pay $20,000 for this ad or whatever, and it would just break us. But advertising is definitely our kind of nemesis.
Makes sense. How do you think about pricing succulents at events? I'm sure that members will ask you how much they should sell clippings or things that they have potted at events. I attended one of your events at Tioga Sequoia, and I was looking at there's a broad range of prices. What do you understand about what gets people to buy succulents at an event?
That's probably the number one question I get from vendors when they come up to me during an event. Like, is this too much? Is this the right price? What should I price this as? And I'm always online. I'm always looking at prices. So I give them an idea. And it's interesting that I think selling anything is that if you are less than what people find online, maybe they purchase from you. If it's more, maybe they won't. So it's playing that balance game. But when
What
it
do you think?
comes,
I've heard a theory that that the quality of the container that you sell the plant in really dictates
your price and people desiring it, because
Mm-hmm.
oftentimes people will look at the plant and like the plant, but also see the container and think, oh, I could use this pot in the future as well.
I've seen that definitely come up during sales, is where you can have two of the same plants. And let's just say they're both the same health-wise, same size. But if one is clean in a new pot, in a clean pot, and labeled correctly, to one that is dirty in a shabby pot, people are always going to spend that $1 or $2 more for that clean pot. And that's just because, as consumers, that's what we want. We want the prettiness factor of it. And even if it's a plain plastic pot, I have a stack of them at home. We all reuse them. But if the pot's dirty, it's not going to make it. And it's just that kind of display. People want that display of buying the plant. And of course, if it's clean and the pot's clean, it makes the plant look healthier, even when they could be the same exact health and like same plant itself. So you definitely can see that at sales.
Okay. What have you learned about the people that buy your plants through interactions at these events? Are there certain commonalities for the people that buy plants at events? I think last year I helped a friend who had he had some aloe and he had some like a soap that he was selling, and it seemed like there was a certain kind of person that would come up and buy a plant from me, whereas the soap, it was a little bit more heterogeneous in terms of who was purchasing the soap. Do you find commonalities in who buys plants at events?
Yes and no. So it's interesting. When we have three categories at events, we have people that are only in the cactus, into both, or only into succulents. So we split people up into that. And
Okay.
then we have them as in the pretty common stuff that they just want pretty plants. They're brand new or a few years in, and they're buying anything they can that's a good price that looks pretty and clean. And then we have the side on all of those that have been doing it for a few years now, have all the common stuff and are looking for the rarities, the hard to find stuff. So yeah, it's all over the board when we go to sales, but you definitely have the different categories of people only looking for succulents, only looking for cactus, a few in between, and they have their wants. And it's interesting to talk to them and see what they're looking for.
Which is the bigger category, succulents or cactus?
Oh, succulents. I
Okay.
think
Like
succulents just because,
exponentially bigger?
oh yeah, if 75 to 25%. And it's just because the succulents come in more colors and they're not, quote, deadly to people. And people aren't going to get the spine in their finger. And there's so
What
many people that are
happens if
afraid
you
of
do?
cactus.
Sorry, my distraction
Very
brain went in
good.
overdrive. What happens if you get a spine in your finger? What do you do?
What I can say is with a spine, maybe not the bigger the better, but a true spine is easier to pull out than those little tiny glockets. There are cactus called like a Puntia microdaisies. It looks like this fluffy cactus. Everyone wants to touch it. And they are these tiny hair-thin thorns that get into your fingers or skin. And they are the hardest to remove. And they hurt more. And you just catch on everything. You can feel them in your hand no matter what. Those are the worst compared to an actual stab wound from like a big thorn that you can just pull out and be done with it. They're just afraid of them. And it's just, I've grabbed so many and you grab the pot. You heal. But yeah, people are afraid of the cactus.
Yeah,
But
that
the
makes
worst is
sense.
definitely those little tiny glockids because they stick around with you. And then you have to get a good tape, like a good packing tape to pull them out. Even go tweezers, do a light behind them and see if the glockid shines in the light. I've even had to go through with, there's always that pesky one that breaks off at skin level or something, and go through with like nail clippers and just take off that top layer of skin just to get rid of it.
Gotcha. I ask every one of my guests this question. I like to ask people how what they do affects the way they see their environment, their world, their city. How do you think your work with the Fresno Succulent and Cactus Society alters or changes the way you view Fresno?
So, the first thing that comes to mind is actually not about the plants itself. It's that we have a hobby club that brings in every type of person in town. We have all from different backgrounds, doctors, retirees, college kids, everything and everyone, all different types of people. And we all get together to talk about a hobby that we love, that we're getting into, or that we have 40 years of experience. And everyone can learn from each other. That's the great thing about this and bringing people together that enjoy these plants for the area. So that's my number one thing. The other part is also that, you know, we always have water problems here, that we always go through droughts. We have a lot of water going to ag and just for the population itself. So maybe it's not the best that everyone has a lawn in an area like this. If you think of, I believe it's Phoenix that doesn't have lawns or other places in the Southwest. That's probably what we should go to, but it's ingrained in our landscape mind that everyone has to have lawns. So having a club like this educates people that it's not just the golden barrels or the big column cactus that they see around town. Like that's the only thing they can use for drought tolerant stuff, is that we have families of cactus and succulents that grow perfectly and have all these shapes and sizes that can grow here. And so we can definitely change out our landscapes to do that and produce a lot less water. Like I did that for my own yard. I took out the grass. I had Bermuda, so it took me 4 years to kill it all. But I've switched over to all drought tolerant. It doesn't mean that everything is native. I love native plants and they have their place. It's just native plants are Mediterranean plants, so they don't look the best during the summertime when they're dormant because we're not getting water. So I mix in a bunch of Australian drought tolerant plants, South Africa, that kind of give me year-round interest. But it's just educating the public that this is what they can do to maybe help the environment around them. It'll help them with their own personal bills, the water bill and everything else like that. But it definitely helps just the environment around us of saving the water, having a nice yard during those drought times when other people are struggling to keep their plants alive. So there's a lot of pros and cons, but definitely a lot more pros to switching out your landscape.
Perfect. We close these podcasts in the same place every time, which is with book recommendations. I would also love for you to share any beyond books, any other educational resources if people are desire to learn more about succulents in a more abstract or book learning sense. What would you recommend?
Yeah, that's the hard part is unfortunately, I love books, and unfortunately they're harder to find now when everything is such a readily available online for people to research and learn about their plants or learn about cactus and succulents. So things have kind
So
of gone a little
let me ask
overboard.
that this way. So if you were
Yes.
designing a learning program for someone that wanted to learn about succulents outside of getting involved in the Succulent Society, what would you recommend?
The number one thing that I always tell people when I like do a presentation or talk to them about cactus and succulents is these plants have evolved for where they have come from. So do your research of just Googling or researching the name of the plant and where it comes from. So knowing where your plant comes from in the wild, if it's native to Baja, native to South America, or even South Africa. Knowing where it comes from is half the battle. Then you know exactly what kind of care it's going to need. Because a lot of us is water year round, not often, but year round, but some plants can't take that. So if you know your plant comes from South Africa, it's only in a winter growing area, then you know that you can't give it water during the summertime. My number one thing for kind of telling people if they're struggling with the plant is to learn where it's from, and that will give you an idea of what it has evolved to take. And putting it into a pot and putting it into your yard does not change its evolution. You can't make it take water year round if that's not what it's meant to be. So definitely just researching where it comes from. And then outside of joining a local cactus and succulent society, learning your soils. We think of it's just taking care of the plant, but it's the substrate, it's the structure that's holding up the plant and providing the nutrients in the water absorption for the plant. If your plant is from a grassland, it can take more organic matter in its soil. So you can use more of a potting mix with some added drainage to it. But if your cactus only grows on limestone cliffs, it may want an inorganic soil mix with a lot of perlite and pumice. So it's definitely knowing where and how your plant grows in the wild and how you can mimic that in your yard or your patio setting.
Fantastic. To close, Robert, where can people find more? Sorry, my
Very
brain might just need to
good.
re-say that. I took about a month off of doing these. I just went through a very strenuous move, and so sometimes I recorded one earlier this week, and I was super rusty. And I feel less rusty on this one. I'm still a little rusty. So to close, Robert, where can people find out more about the Fresno Succulent and Cactus Society online, and when is your next meeting or event that you will be hosting? This will be airing on Monday, October 13th.
Oh, right around the corner. So our Fresno Cactus and Succulent Society, we meet in person at the Redeemer Lutheran Church, which is Bullard and Palm in the Fresno area. I have their address here as 1084 West Bullard, but we're there every first Thursday of the month, except for September and December. So our next meeting is going to be November 6th. We have a great speaker coming from the Modesto area. I'm not sure what he's speaking on yet, but you can find more information online with our website, which is just www.fresnocss.com. So we have that there. Also, if you just have questions, like to join or contact me for any information, our email is just FresnoCSS, all one word, at yahoo.com. And then we also have our Facebook and Instagram pages, all Fresno Cactus and Succulent Society. So you can search from us there. But our meetings are great. We have a speaker each month that comes from around the state, sometimes even outside the state, where they give a presentation on one of their trips from around the world, how to grow certain plants, and they also bring in plants for sale. We have an area in the meeting that people bring all their free plants that they took cuttings of for the month or dug up. So there's always a free plant area. And then we also have a opportunity drawing each month for people. So it's a great meeting, 40 to 60 people sometimes, but we have a lot of space. And we also offer these meetings as hybrid for any members that can't join in person or either outside of Fresno, Clovis area, can't make it in, especially during the darker months. But we also offer that Zoom option too.
This has been a lot of fun, Robert, and I feel motivated to plant some succulents. So I appreciate the personal motivation, and I hope people attend. And these sound like fantastic opportunities to learn more about this beautiful plant life.
I appreciate it. Thank you for this opportunity. It's been an awesome time.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.